This is potentially worse than the Great Depression, because the interconnectedness of the world means it will affect everywhere. This won't just be a depression in one country or America and Germany. This is going to be a global depression. And there are entire countries that are going to go into famine. And they just don't get the enormity of what's going to happen to the entire planet now.
All right, welcome, folks, to today's urgent interview on the verge of, the next stage of war in the Middle East, because, I guess Trump can't just admit that he's lost this and walk away. So he's got to keep escalating to the point of insanity, even if the whole world suffers. So joining us today to help analyze this is one of my favorite guests. Matt Bracken joins us. And welcome, Matt. It's great to have you on the show. Let me give out your Twitter handle. It's Matt_Bracken48. You're also a noted author of some very popular books that really foresaw a lot of what's happening right now. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. I wish it was under happier circumstances.
Well, you're not kidding. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at the end of the world's energy backbone as we have known it for our entire lives. And the thing that strikes me about your tweets and what I see out there is that people don't realize what's already happened, do they?
No, they don't. People think that because there's still gasoline at the station, you know, that things are going to get back to normal. In a few months, we'll be okay again. They really don't get the big picture, which is, you know, there's like a between all these nations, there's a conveyor belt that is sliding these ships across the globe at the, you know, at a bicycle speed. And, you know, if you just isolate particular countries, Australia, Japan, UK, you know, every day, every other day, another tanker rolls in and keeps them topped off. They stopped coming, you know, on February 28th or 29th, they stopped coming. So it seems normal because they haven't absolutely hit the wall yet for petroleum, and with a longer time horizon, fertilizer. But there, even if like a miracle happened and peace was declared and everything was opened up today, this bubble is like an airlock going through a diesel system. I don't know if anybody's ever, you know, messed around with diesel engines, but if you take the whole fuel system apart, you know, if you take all the high pressure and low pressure tubes apart, no matter what's happening, you just can't turn it on and go because you've got an airlock, and we've got a global airlock. And that's this bubble. Or another analogy would be, you know, you have a intestinal twist. You know, you can die from a gas embolism in your gut. You can literally die. And it's one of the most painful ways to die is a gas embolism. So everything's fine, but you ate something bad and this huge gas pocket happened and it tried to make one of those 180 bends in your great intestine or your lower intestine, and it twisted instead. And it just keeps blowing up and you die. But all you did was eat some, you know, bad pepperoni. I mean, this is the situation that the world is in. And I often go back to a tsunami example. You know, the earthquake might have happened, 12 hours ago, 10,000 miles away in the ocean, and everything at the beach seems normal. It's a beautiful day in Thailand or Indonesia. It's just another fantastic day. And the elephants are getting nervous and running for the hills, but the people have no memory of this. And it's one of these situations where people just can't grasp the enormity of what's coming. Like, they can't grasp the enormity of a tidal wave. You know, when the suckback begins, these signs appear. Only a few people even understand them. People walk down to the shore as the tide is suddenly going out hundreds of yards. They're fascinated. It's like, wow, what a unique phenomenon. Let's go down and look at sunk boats and old anchors.
Yeah, they start collecting seashells down there.
Yeah, like, collecting this is awesome, seashells. You know? And this is repeated in history. There was a great earthquake that hit Portugal 500 years ago, and Lisbon is in a, you know, the topography of it means that a tsunami would push up like a fjord. There was one in Alaska that just by the topography, and we don't understand that, and people can't grasp it. It's beyond their understanding. It's like in economics, they call it a Kondratiev wave, or it's like a 80-year generational cycle. There's no institutional memory of this, so it can't possibly be happening because, you know, it can't be happening because nobody, that not even grandpa remembers this.
Yeah.
This is potentially worse than the Great Depression because the interconnectedness of the world means it will affect everywhere. This won't just be a depression in one country or America and Germany. This is going to be a global depression. And there are entire countries that are going to go into famine, literally into famine. And there are still these numbnuts on Fox News and on all over X saying, this is great. Look at all these tankers coming to Texas. That means we're like top dog. You know, we're now ruling the energy world. And they just don't get the enormity of what's going to happen to the entire planet now.
And here we are right now, today, as you and I are recording this. I believe that J.D. Vance is not flying to Pakistan for the latest round of so-called negotiations, which have always been a farce from the West. There's never any good faith negotiations from the USA. So it looks like within the next 24 hours, Trump is going to initiate a new round of bombing, and Iran has threatened to retaliate with a new round of escalatory targeting of energy infrastructure throughout the Gulf states.
And this afternoon, including in the United States proper.
Okay, I haven't seen that yet. Tell us about that one, because I've been here in the studio.
So Vance is not going. It's a calculated insult, actually, to send. I'm almost surprised that the Iranians went for the last round, because sending Kushner and Witkoff back to Islamabad after what we did on February 28th, you know, the week before, we concluded the negotiations. The Omani diplomats were saying things are looking positive. We left saying, see you in Geneva on Monday.
Right, right.
And then Witkoff came back and told Trump, now's our chance. We can get them now. So we did the decapitation strikes, which I think Bibi Netanyahu had a lot to do with. And I don't think that Netanyahu or the Israelis or Mossad ever thought that there'd be a popular uprising, because their agenda is the complete destruction of the state of Iran. So they thought they could trick Trump into initiating this war, selling him that it's a 3 or 4 days, there'll be a popular uprising, the people will all be grateful. You know, they're going to be erecting a statue of Trump right there in Tehran. And he believed it.
Right.
Because, you know, at this level, the psychological and psychiatric analysis of major actors is like absolutely at the highest level.
Yeah.
So they have understood his dementia and his the buttons to push for him, his megalomania, his narcissism. That you can be the great man of history, which is what Trump wants to be. I mean, you know, all the gold in the White House, statues, ballrooms. He wants to be a great man of history. He wants to be like a Teddy Roosevelt, a Franklin Roosevelt, an Abraham Lincoln. That's what motivates him. It's not money. He could care less. It's to be in history books as a great man.
Well, he will be in the history books as a war criminal.
Well, of course. And you know, it's interesting. And I you know, I step on toes or throw wild pitches at people's heads on X, because I post, you know, pictures of Pearl Harbor or the Stukas diving on, you know, Poland on September 1, 1939. And, you know, the Germans, when they launched these attacks, and the Japanese, when they launched Pearl Harbor, they never thought that they might end up being hanged for it. You know, they were on a roll. The Germans were on a roll from 1939 to say 1941, 42, things started slowing down. You know, they didn't get to Moscow by the end of 1941, then there's Stalingrad. Then they're all the way back to Berlin, then they're at Nuremberg, then in 1946, they're hanged. And we hanged Japanese also, the ones that we didn't want to keep as scientists, which is another story. But yeah, the generals that sign off on plans of aggression, that was like the number one charge at Nuremberg. It's like charge number one, planning and waging a war of aggression. You know, you weren't attacked. You weren't attacked. You decided, and to compound this, we did something. It's like, it sounds like an archaic old English word or something. You know, you perfidious villain. But perfidy means to lure somebody in with the white flag of truce. Like, you know, send out an emissary with a white flag and say, come and meet and we'll talk about, and then you hang everybody. It's a, in Braveheart, there's a classic scene where the Scottish nobles are like lured to talks and then they're all hanged. That's called perfidy.
Right.
That's what
we
did. And
the U.S. has done that numerous times now.
And the Japanese were actually less perfidious because before December 7th attack, they actually broke off diplomatic relations. Now, you can say it's a technicality. You know, they did it just like hours before when they knew the fleet, you know, their aircraft carriers were approaching Pearl Harbor. But they actually did send out the telegrams, you know, we are no longer, the negotiations are off, all bets are off, take care of you, you know, mind your top knot, oh, anything can happen. They sent that out before Pearl Harbor.
Right.
We did not. On the Friday before, we said, see you in Geneva. Things are looking good.
But this is,
and then we dropped tomahawks. And when people say decapitation, I prefer to use the word assassination. Because, you know, decapitation, what's that mean? Oh, that's like defenstration. No, you threw somebody off a building. Decapitation, no, it's assassination. But it's worse. You're not sending Mark Wahlberg or American sniper actor. You're not sending them in a spotter, like with a rifle, into Tehran, right? You're saying, we're going to put a Tomahawk missile into an apartment building and kill everybody. Because we think that's where this guy sleeps. That's how we're now playing Israel Gaza Lebanon rules. We're playing Beirut rules. So when we assassinate a guy, we're hitting the entire building.
We're and demolishing killing the whole family too, typically. Yeah.
Right. And he might not even be there because Palantir's Lavender program said there's an 80% chance. And since we're doing this all as a time on target hit so that nobody can be warned, we're going to do this as a time on target hit. All the missiles are going to hit at the same time. Well, that guy, it's a 90% chance he'll be home. That guy, it's a 60% chance he'll be home. That guy, it's a 75%. That's good enough. And so you hit the girls' school, which is you know, Iranian Navy officers' dependents. My kids went to school on Navy bases. I mean, my kids went to DOD schools. You're telling me, whoops, we just hit all the buildings around there. And one of them happened to have, you know, a couple hundred schoolgirls in it. Sorry, that was during a sneak attack.
Yeah, and that was, as you are hinting, Israel will level an entire residential apartment complex to get one person, even a chance to get one person. But right. I want to ask you,
yeah, go ahead. And we've done this before, and it's not only the two times. We did the same trick before the 12-day war, but we also did it in a sense when we hit the Hamas negotiating team in Qatar, because we had full operational control of that. And we knew that the Israeli strike was coming in, and we didn't tell them, hey, duck.
Right, right.
So no, this why would anybody again, trust us at this point?
Well, and also there's no point really for Iranian negotiators to spend any time with U.S. representatives when clearly Witkoff and Kushner are Zionist agents. J.D. Vance has no authority. And Trump is actually subject to Netanyahu's authority.
Right.
So there's really no point in negotiating
with Trump,
the U.S.
And Trump is clearly out of his mind.
Yes, on top of that.
So you're really kind of like hoping that one of the admirals or generals is going to keep the nuclear codes away from him, as has been reported.
Right. Right.
What state of the world is this where you don't even know who you're really negotiating with because you don't know if the president is going to wake up and say nuke Tehran? Will that be carried out?
There was an allegation recently from former CIA Larry Johnson, who you know. Who said that Trump tried to invoke something about the nuclear codes recently in the White House, and a top war general pushed back and perhaps invoked a law. I'm not familiar with the details. Are you familiar with Larry Johnson?
Yeah, I listened to Alex Jones this afternoon with Robert Barnes.
Yes.
who's a notable attorney with Viva and Barnes. And
yes, absolutely.
So, and that guy is like incredibly smart. I mean, he is
no question.
He is like next level. When Barnes is talking, I'm listening. And he and Alex said they had a lot of sources, leaking to them, because some of these people, I mean, I'm sure that they're, people like Tulsi Gabbard or some of the military officers in the room, they have to be thinking, at what point do I just walk out and hold a press conference? I have great admiration for Melania Trump. She is essentially divorced from Trump right now, other than like going into a witness protection program. When she called that press conference, she hasn't been seen next to Trump since then.
Uh-huh.
She has. I doubt they're sleeping in the same room. She did that for personal protection. She did that unannounced presser without White House knowledge, I think, to protect herself.
Yeah.
So that she can't be Charlie Kirked. She can't, slip on a banana peel and fall down the steps and break her neck, right? Or develop turbo cancer of the throat and, that she can't talk anymore and then she's dead. So she did that for protection. That's where we are now. This is like Rome Caligula time period. That's what we're talking about.
So but
Barnes was very, Barnes and Alex were both, on the same exact point as Larry Johnson, saying that they have numerous inside sources. They're not ready to fall on the sword, go out and hold a press conference. Like, I think that what Joe Kent did was very honorable. And I wish that, say, Tulsi Gabbard would, or one of these admirals or generals, just say, I don't know if you remember a guy named David Hackworth, Colonel David Hackworth,
but yes,
he was the youngest colonel in the U.S. Army. He was a battlefield commission in Korea. He tried to get into World War II. He was too young. He went in the Merchant Marine at like 16 for World War II. Then he was in Korea and he was a battlefield commission. That means you're doing something so unbelievable on a battlefield that somebody says, you're the lieutenant now. you're the lieutenant. So he's in Vietnam. He was a fast rising superstar, given a lot of leeway to have your own battalion and develop tactics, write books on tactics. He took his uniform off, went on a CBS, one of those Sunday morning programs, circa like early 70s, and said, I can't do this anymore. And so he basically threw away his pension, his career, and said, I got to tell the truth to the American people. Then he was expat to Australia for years. He was very disillusioned. He wrote a great book called About Face. Super honorable guy. And I wish that there were some admirals or generals like that. Unfortunately, if you turn on Fox News, you see guys like these paid war lusters like Admiral Harwood, a SEAL, who said, this war, if we go to war with Iran, it'll just take a matter of hours. Now he's saying it's great, but if we have to take those Hormuz Islands, yeah, there'll be casualties, but we can do it. Been driven out of the Persian Gulf. This is a huge paradigm shift.
Yeah,
this is like a century paradigm shift. This is the equivalent of a Britain and America being driven out of China 100 years ago.
That's right. That's right. This history is unfolding by the hour and not in our favor as Americans. So let me pivot slightly because of your experience with the Navy SEALs, I believe helping to plan missions and recon and helping to coordinate logistics and all kinds of things. I want your opinion on the fact that the U.S. is now committing what appears to be just piracy on the high seas and is boarding tankers that are going to or from China that are in the Arabian Sea, not even in the Strait of Hormuz, because we don't dare get close enough to the Strait.
No, we don't get close. No. But
give us your assessment of what this is. And China has already lashed out against this practice. What do you think is going to happen next?
My dad was in World War II. My dad was a 90-day wonder. He already had kids, but the word was that they were going to start drafting men with children. So he had a college degree. He went to Princeton, and 90 days later, he's an ensign. He was on a fleet tug, which we don't have enough of. We started World War II with three fleet tugs, like one for the Atlantic, one for the Pacific, and a spare. And we ended World War II with like 200 of them. They were so important. And that ship that we put the 5-inch shell through, or 5-inch shells through, then what do we do with it? You can't tow it with a destroyer. Anyway, the fleet tugs were 200-foot ships that with a giant locomotive engine that could tow things off the battlefield and defend themselves. So because of my dad being in World War II in 1945 and then in occupation 46, going through China, Japan, all over the Pacific, I was raised on all these books about these great naval battles and documentary series like Victory at Sea that was huge, like in the 60s, Victory at Sea, like a black and white, huge documentary TV series. We had battles in the Pacific that were like, 10 Japanese destroyers versus 5 PT boats and 2 American cruisers, where they're slugging it out. They're like just blasting each other point blank, like a parking lot gunfight between warships, right? I mean, ships sunk, ships destroyed. And the U.S. Navy now has come to a submarine sinking an unarmed tiny frigate. You're calling it a frigate is a stretch. It's like a large patrol boat. This Iranian patrol boat, unarmed, on a diplomatic mission, just commissioned like a month ago, not even armed, goes to India. We do this sneak attack war of aggression, and then we sink this frigate when it's between India and Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
They had no idea we were in any kind of a war. And we torpedoed it and killed, at least 100 of their crew. And then our next big glorious naval adventure is a Arleigh Burke-class destroyer with a 5-inch gun, 5-inch projectile, disabling a unarmed merchant ship.
A tanker, yes. Yeah.
Driving parallel. This is like my dad used to use the example. My dad didn't go to Notre Dame, but he always was a big Notre Dame fan. He said, that's like Notre Dame playing the Little Sisters of the Poor.
Right, okay? Right.
That's like, that's like, don't have that game. For the American Navy to now, their big glorious sea battles are to sink an unarmed mini frigate on a diplomatic mission. Yeah. I didn't even know that a submarine was in, and it wasn't like after Pearl Harbor where we were attacked and now we're attacking back. We started the war with perfidy, and then a few days later we sink this unarmed mini frigate, 1,000 miles from Iran, and then our next big thing is firing a 5-inch shell at an unarmed merchant ship.
Right.
I mean, the U.S. Navy should be so embarrassed by this. I was an officer. I was on ships, and they would have, in the wardroom books of, World War II books, the officers are raised on these sea battles. These ships can fire shells 10 miles, 20 miles. We were in sea battles like the Battle of Leyte Gulf. Late in World War II,
yeah.
Where the Japanese are trying to make a breakthrough in between islands in the Philippines. And Admiral Halsey went off on a flyer, so his carrier battle group is like out of the picture. And so we've got these like quote-unquote jeep carriers and destroyers trying to hold off Japanese cruisers and battleships. And they're firing not 20 miles and 30 miles, they're like 5 miles apart, blasting each other. Just half the crew killed or the ships are sunk. And now our Navy is sinking a frigate that doesn't know that there's a war on or is stopping a merchant ship with a 5-inch shell.
What happens when the U.S. Navy comes up against, let's say, Chinese naval assets or Russian submarines? Because it seems like we could be headed in that direction.
But before we even go to Russia or China, when Trump ordered the secondary blockade, right? Like, I'm going to choke your chokehold higher so that we get no air whatsoever to the world economy. There's still 10%. Let's choke that off. That blockade is a line drawn between the Iran-Pakistan border on the north of the Gulf of Oman. That's sort of the border of the Gulf of Oman. And then the eastern point of Oman. So our destroyers only went up to there as... depending on the definition, you call a picket line, That's their radar. Plus, you've got aerial reconnaissance. They have helicopters on board those destroyers. But the Tripoli and the Lincoln, they're going to stay way back because they don't want to be hit by a missile. But they're only doing this during a ceasefire when they think that there's not a great chance that the Iranians are going to fire actual cruise missiles at them. But all bets are off if this thing kicks off again. And now the world pretty much knows, outside of a declared ceasefire, the U.S. Navy won't come within 1,000 kilometers, 600 miles of even Iran. So if you draw that 1,000-kilometer border around Asia, you're encompassing South Korea, most of Japan, Taiwan, Luzon in the Philippines, Vietnam. That's now, obviously, to the world, the American Navy no-go zone. So if China wants to blockade Taiwan,
yeah,
forget it. We can't. Right. We won't. So we had bases in the Persian Gulf. The Fifth Fleet headquarters was in Bahrain.
Yeah.
And everything was predicated on, we're paying you a ton of money. We're letting you have bases. You can fly airplanes in and out. And you can dock Navy ships here and repair Navy ships here. And you'll protect us with your incredible radar and your fantastic Patriot and THAAD systems. All of that has been shown to be complete BS. So right before February 28th, because it's very critical that our Navy didn't flee the Persian Gulf after the sneak attack. Our Navy snuck out of the Persian Gulf before the sneak attack. So they knew what was coming. Some of it was like, well, you know, we don't need these old mine clearers anymore. We're going to send them home. But our Navy slipped out of the Persian Gulf. So when the missiles started flying, we didn't protect Bahrain. We just made Bahrain a target, along with Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar. They just became targets.
Right.
And the new calculus is, these little Shahed drones that cost reportedly $30,000, that's probably lowball, say $50,000. But when you're talking foreign currency, you know, it's almost like meaningless to just talk about like rubles versus the dollar. You know, each economy is so unique, right? I mean, it's not like, you know, you could buy the Shahed drone and build one in Texas for $30,000. But that's the kind of money that they use figures like $30,000 to knock out $1 billion radar.
Yeah.
And these radars are what allows our THAAD and Patriot batteries to get the early warning to aim at a specific point. So the giant radar with, you know, 300-mile range out into space can study the whole panorama. And then when it sees something coming, it sends that message to the THAAD battery. So the THAAD battery is not scanning the whole panorama of the sky. The THAAD battery is immediately looking at that 1 degree of space.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Ted Postol, and his videos are excellent, this MIT professor.
Yeah.
So they immediately took out our eyes. They took out our eyes with $30,000 drones against $1 billion radars. We only had like 12 in the whole Middle East. They took them out. So now a Patriot or a THAAD battery is trying to like scan the whole sky, which it can't do. It wasn't designed to do.
Yeah. So Matt, stand by because we're wrapping up part one of our interview here. And I just want to remind people to follow you on X. Your handle is Matt_Bracken48. And then also part two of this interview is also going to be posted at brightvideos.com, where Matt and I will cover the long-term prognosis of where this is headed, and also specifically about, is there a global sabotage effort underway to take out oil refining and fertilizer infrastructure? That's what we'll be starting with in the next segment. So stand by, Matt, and thank you all for watching today. Mike Adams here at brightvideos.com. Take care. We now have vitamin D3 plus K2 plus Aquaman, which is a seaweed calcium, available at healthrangerstore.com. Here, I've got it up on my side here. This is the Groovy Bee brand that we have, which is our in-house brand, healthrangerstore.com. Again, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman. That's the brand of the seaweed calcium in a capsule format. Of course, it's laboratory tested for heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology and so much more. And it's certified ingredients, of course. And, you know, everything that we build for you in terms of a product is meticulously sourced. And one of the most difficult products to source is actually vitamin D3. It's extremely difficult because it turns out in the supply chain, almost all vitamin D has a bunch of sort of unnamed ingredients in it. And that's what our sourcing people found after a couple of years of trying to source a clean version of vitamin D3 that we finally found and nailed and put it in the formula and did all the lab testing and certification. So now it's available. So this synergistic combination, if you think about natural bone support, for example, or you think about the fact that so many people may not have sufficient levels of vitamin D for just optimal health and immune support and, you know, many other reasons to have vitamin D levels, this product can help you supplement that. And so it's available now, healthrangerstore.com, vitamin D3 plus K2 with Aquaman, 60 capsules available, shipping right now while supplies last. And in this environment where global supply chains are getting wrecked, you know, if this is something you want, get it now while we have supplies, because it's becoming more difficult and more expensive to source literally everything at this point. So anyway, thank you for your support. You can also find many other products, of course, hundreds of different products at healthrangerstore.com, including storable food. And right here we have our organic powdered chicken bone broth in a number 10 can, our turmeric root powder, and so much more. We've got so many amazing products for you to choose from, including tinctures, superfoods, storable foods, as well as freeze-dried fruits and vegetables in sealed number 10 cans. That's great for long-term storage. Plus, we have iodine, and that's a product that's moving very quickly because of concerns about, you know, global nuclear war, unfortunately. But you can find all of this. It's all laboratory tested. It's all certified. It's all meticulously sourced at healthrangerstore.com. And yeah, there we go. That's what the vitamin D3 looks like there. Thank you for supporting us, because we need your support in order to fund our platform. And so we can keep bringing you amazing interviews and content and free AI tools for knowledge and so much more. So thank you for supporting us. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, for healthrangerstore.com.